Welcome to Cat Chat and Dog Talk. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Sean, the Natural Vet, on our new show. We're here for 2 whole hours to answer any question you have about your pets. Our number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. We'd like to thank our sponsors and let you know we've invited these companies to be here because we believe in them and use them ourselves. Please show your appreciation for their support by becoming a customer yourself. And Whole Life Pet will send you a free sample box of freeze-dried protein treats for cats and dogs if you send me your mailing address to radiopetlady@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out all the wonderful live pet shows I co-host every week on our new network. Go to radiopetlady.com to see the schedule. Cat Chat and Dog Talk is a production of 8 Paws LLC, and Dr. Sean Messonnier, DVM PC, which are solely responsible for its content. Our number again is 888-627-6008. We'd love to hear from you. Dr. Sean, the Natural Vet, how are things in Texas?
Great, Tracy. How are you doing up north?
We're fine. There was supposed to be a snowstorm, but then, of course, it doesn't happen because, you know, they have to have something to talk about, even if it doesn't happen. But what we have is a snowfall of questions that I've been stockpiling during the week.
We've been getting a lot of questions.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
It is. And you know what's really nice, Sean, is that people have found the show. They write in and say, I'm at work tonight. I got my kids' basketball game, but I'm going to either listen on my iPhone or my iPad, or I'm going to listen to it later in the podcast. They already figured out that it's if they can't be live, they can still be with us somehow or other, which is really cool.
Yes.
All right. So the first one is actually a question that came into you personally, probably from the echoes of the day when you had Dr. Sean, the Natural Vet, on Sirius XM. And I'm thinking this was one of your listeners from there. So welcome to the new show, Mr. Owner of Champ, the Brindle Boxer Mix. Here's his question. He's 7 to 8 years old. He's a Brindle Boxer Mix. His name is Champ. He had a joint. Now, this is one of those things that I'm also going to ask Dr. Donna, the expert vet, on Monday because she does like second opinions. And I'm wondering if there's red herrings in this story. He had a joint replacement last summer and did well after the surgery. This summer, he developed a deep hacking cough that the vet here diagnoses perhaps kennel cough. Already I'm seeing two things in this question that are a red flag to me, like information-wise. After 4 to 5 days on the meds, what meds, by the way, Sean, do you give for kennel cough?
Well, traditional vets would use a lot of antibiotics, sometimes some steroids, some cough suppressants. I use a lot of my own herbs that are designed to boost the immune system and have antibiotic-like effects. But I'll use some antibiotics if it's a very severe case, if it's a very young puppy. So it really just depends. My guess is this dog's probably been overtreated with some antibiotics and steroids.
Okay. So 4 to 5 days on the meds, there was no improvement. So the next diagnosis was perhaps congestive heart failure. They put him on Lasix.
Which is quite a bit different from kennel cough.
Yeah, and quite a bit different. I mean, it's like,
I don't know how they got that one, but that's okay.
Yeah. How did you diagnose that? We had a question like that on Dr. Donna's show. It was a little poodle that had dental work and developed this horrendous cough and was treated with Lasix for heart problem. But really, it was just esophageal irritation from the breathing tube and, you know, it's like they really missed it. The cough is gone, but now when he drinks water, he throws it up within about 20 minutes. The vomit is clear and sometimes contains white, phlegmy-looking matter. After listening to your show, I tried him – I think he means our show. I tried to move him from a straight diet of kibble to healthy, wet food.
Okay.
I just want to interject for folks that advice of no kibble is a cat issue. That's for obligate carnivores, which are cats. We embrace kibble for dogs along with many other things. So the all wet diet is really about kitties. At the direction of the local vet, we've put him on a diet. Now, wait a minute. What has that got to do with the cough? And he's lost approximately 11 pounds, even though he acts hungry all the time.
Okay. Now, that is not kennel cough. It's probably not congestive heart failure.
Right.
So these are things that you're going through the question. I just want our listeners to understand.
Yes.
These are clues you've got to look for that don't fit the proposed diagnosis.
Exactly. And then the gentleman winds up saying, So, he says, just like that, my question to you is, what the heck is causing the vomiting? I'd be like, hang on, my friend.
What's causing the cough?
What the heck's causing the cough?
Yes. All right. So, you know, when I get questions like this, and it's nice to talk about these on our show.
Yes.
You mentioned about vets doing consults, and I think I had even told this gentleman if we couldn't help him tonight, he can always call my office. We can
Good.
Do phone appointments,
Good.
Phone consults, because Good. Even though I'm going to give some generic information today, obviously, by law, I can't diagnose a pet on the radio. We have to have some sort
right.
of a more formal arrangement. So my general thought would be if the dog
and,
is
– Can I just interrupt
yes,
one second?
Go ahead.
The other thing is by law, as I understand it from Donna, who does these long-distance consults, unless that man has come into your clinic, you can't, quote-unquote, legally give him advice. You have to have his medical records and at some point talk to his vet. That's my understanding that the vet.
Well, it really just kind of depends. We try to get the vet involved. I mean, usually the vet's involved as far as sending us records and that kind of thing.
Okay.
Sometimes it's very hard for the vets to take time and get on the phone.
Well, that's an involvement,
the vet's
though,
involved.
If they give you the records, right?
That's right, because the vets are the ones that have to release the records. And what I tell people is that you have to understand that, you know, even when we're doing a phone appointment or even a walk-in appointment but the pet's too sick to bring in, that – I can't be, by law, your primary doctor. You still have to have a doctor.
Right.
I can give you suggestions on things to follow up with. If there's certain supplements that we have I think could be helpful, I can send those to you. But
right.
your doctor is still the primary person involved and needs to understand what's going on. So that's very
okay.
important to understand.
Okay, good.
Okay.
So
you know, my suggestion for him would be I can't answer his question without more testing, and it sounds like no testing has been done, at least from
That's
his
right.
voicemail. So
yeah.
I would be getting this dog in, number one, to find out why it's coughing. So we're doing chest x-rays or an ultrasound of the chest. Of course, I hope we've already done a blood test. I hope we've already done a fecal analysis and a urine analysis. Those are things that compromise the minimum database. We might need to be doing ultrasounds of this dog. But my question is, why is he having a continued cough? Why is he losing weight? Because that's not a good sign with a cough. Do we have an EKG? Does he have a heart murmur? What are some other things? You know, just to throw these diagnoses out there, heart murmur one day, heart disease, heart failure, kennel cough, which is unlikely
right.
to affect
right.
your dog. I don't think we're doing proper diagnostics yet.
I agree.
But that needs to be done.
That's what it sounds like to me. It's like all over the map. And actually, if I'm rereading this again, it's like more red herrings. The cough is gone now. But after he drinks water, he throws up 20 minutes later. So it's like, hang on, what does that got to do with the hip replacement last summer? I don't
yeah,
know.
Probably
Why
not.
Did he bring that up?
I mean, I don't know. It probably has nothing to do with it. Is the dog also throwing up food or just water? It's kind of weird.
Just water, apparently.
Food. See, that's very unusual. So, you know, I would wonder, once again, I think we, even though the cough is better, I still would like to know why he had the cough. And I want to, especially with weight loss, that just bothers me because dogs
yes.
with coughs, dogs with vomiting, unless it's chronic or there's something serious. And with a boxer, I've got to think of heart failure. I've got to think of cancer.
That's right.
Depending on where he lives, I may have to think of fungal disease, valley fever, those kinds of things
yes.
that I see in Texas. But those are things you got to think about.
And another thing is that he said, I don't know what the timeline is, that after listening to our show, he moved from a straight diet of kibble. Well, that's good. We don't want any animal to have just kibble and nothing else, to healthy wet food. And then he says, at the direction of the local vet, we've put him on a diet. Now, what
sort of
diet?
Well, I hope he's not trying to lose more weight. That's not good.
That's crazy. And 11 pounds, I mean, this came up on the expert vet with Dr. Donna. Someone had gotten in touch, and they were real happy that their Labrador had lost 25 pounds, not on a diet. And their own veterinarian, Sean, over a period of weeks, probably months, never said, wow, a giant weight loss. That's really terrible and worrisome. We should be doing tests.
Yeah.
And then he wound up having some terrible, dreadful thing that, you know, had it been caught earlier, big weight loss. I mean, we all think we'd like to, not you because you're perfect, but the rest of us would like to. I know, and you don't even have to try because when you're perfect, you don't even have to try. But the rest of us would like to lose a little weight, but if any of us suddenly dropped 10% of our body weight, I
then
mean,
you're not
this
trying.
Is,
that's the scary part.
Yeah, then your doctor should be saying to you, test, please, you know, like check, please. So it's great that he got in touch with you, but now he has to really get in touch with you. Because mm-hmm. I think a lot of diagnostics has to do with intelligent questions and then logical responses to the questions, right? There's an illogical piece to all this
yeah,
that I don't get. Is the cough the problem? Is the vomiting the problem? or is the weight loss the problem? Because I would say the vet certainly diagnostically is challenged, because he'll just say any old thing and put you on Lasix and put you on antibiotics. It's like, really?
Yeah, that's something kind of wasteful. Right with this
something
story.
Isn't right. Okay. So here's the number again. When Sean and I are going through these things, if y'all are listening, you can call in and Doug will just put you on hold. So don't feel you have to wait for us to come up for air, because we tend not to come up for air. We just keep right on keeping on. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I'm going to go now to another question that came to me, but it's really for us.
Okay.
It's from Joni. I live in Pennsylvania. She misses the Martha channel of Sirius. I live in Pennsylvania, so will not have access to your show. But you will, Joni, because we're on the World Wide Web. It's free, and anybody with a computer, an iPhone, an iPad, anything can listen. But she didn't know that. She said, I really miss that station. I listen to it all the time. Guess what, honey? Three of us are right here. Dr. Sean, me, and Greg from It's a Dog's Life. So there's not that much to miss, really.
No.
She said, can you tell me how I can get your info on what to feed cats? I now possess my daughter's two cats. She just had a baby, and her husband is afraid of the cats around the baby. Well, Joni, I wrote a blog about this, and it's really important to understand cats are no danger to babies. In fact, they've found that babies, infants, children raised around pets have a much lower likelihood of having allergies because their immune system gets used to them and deals with them early on. The question is, the cats have been with me since November. I only feed wet food. Yay, Joni. I feed Friskies and Fancy Feast. I just can't afford the more expensive brands from Petco. No problem. Any wet is better than any dry. This is me interjecting that. How much should I feed them? I think they would eat all day if I kept giving it to them. They were underweight when I got them, but now I feel they're getting too fat. Well, you know, Sean, this is an interesting question. What is fat with a cat? And what is underweight with a cat? Because we're all used to seeing in advertisements and in people's lives, chunky monkey cats. They're always round. One could dare one say obese. They're plump. They're chunky. They're kind of fat, because that's a look that we've come to think of. But really, they're meant to look as sleek as a cheetah or a leopard or a panther. I mean, yes. Their shape is meant to be long and lean and, you know, not to fat. So I'm not sure what underweight meant to her, but I'm not sure what she means by fat either. And, you know, 10 pounds is the average weight of a cat. But if you have a big breed cat, it could be 12, 14. But if you have a cat that's high teens or 20 pounds, that is a fat or morbidly obese cat. Unless you have a cat that, you know, is crossed with a lion and it's as big as your Great Dane.
You know, I think it's important to point out, too, when people ask me what their pets should weigh when they come to my office, like I tell people, you know, I don't really focus on the number so much as the body condition score. And as long as I can feel your pet's ribs and backbone without putting a lot of pressure in, when you're looking at it from the top, there's a little bit of a waist there. I don't really care about the numbers on the scale that much. I can look at a pet and feel it and say it needs to lose a few pounds, maybe gain a few pounds. Now, in my practice, in my own life, I tend to prefer my patients and my own pets kind of underweight. That's just me. Yes. I see fewer problems with them. Yes. You know, it's very easy in many instances to make a pet fat. It's very hard to drop the weight. So I'd rather them be a little underweight than a little bit chunky, especially as they're getting older. Cats and dogs with arthritis is a problem, and weight loss is so important for those pets.
You can really see the difference. I have two
geriatrics,
and boy, when I can get the weight off them, 5 pounds, 6 pounds, however many pounds, they move easier. They're not they're not as limping, they're not as lame. They're freer to move around. They're not hauling around all this extra weight. So in terms of thinking that they eat all day, I mean, the kind of rule on the show is you give breakfast, you give dinner, about half a can of a small can per cat. But if you're just getting them off kitty crack, if they've been carb addicted and have been eating the improper food for the obligate carnivore, which is highly processed carbohydrates, then sometimes they are craving it, just like people that have to try and give up cookies, candy, Fritos, sometimes have a real struggle with it. Their brain wants it. Their mouth wants it. They're actually on a cellular level. They're craving it. So if these kitties are past the craving stage and they still seem hungry, I would always say to people, play with them. Get a Necco Flies or another really great wand toy. Play with them. Sometimes they just may want to do something. And we all think, well, I guess you want to eat. I mean, imagine if your daughter came home and every time she went, hey, Dad, you said, here, have a cookie. I mean, that's sort of what people think about their
Why
pet
shouldn't do that?
Dog. Well, actually, you can do it because I always love you.
Then she'll shut up and not bug me.
Yeah, that's right. Don't give her a dollar every time. Just ask her for a dollar.
I know.
But basically, we forget that maybe they just want to interact. Maybe they want to have fun. You know, I think that the perception that a cat is hungry all the time. Now, if it's a meowing cat and it's going to the cupboard where it knows the kitty crack used to be or the cans are, then the kind of rule of thumb is protein is great for a cat. It's, you know, the body uses it. It metabolizes. You don't get fat. If you write to me, Joni, and give me your mailing address, you get a free sample box of Whole Life Pet Treats. They're human grade, freeze dried, all protein. But you can also use little bits of any leftover protein you have at home. Little bits of steak, chicken, low sodium deli meats, little bits just to give them little marvelous things, little bits of cheese. All that's good. And then she asks another question. It's a multi-layered question, but
all right, we like those too.
We like her. We like someone who wants to think of all the issues. The other thing is they really want to go outside. They've been indoor cats, so like don't mess up what you've already done. If I let them out, they will return within a short time. Yeah, until the car hits them, Joni. Here's the problem.
Yes,
they'll return given a chance, but life isn't so kind to cats. Cars are the number one killer. Dogs will kill them and be successful. Other cats that are loose and unvaccinated and unowned could bite them, and they could die of the disease that they're given or get abscess from it. There's really, other than putting in a catio or a patio, and that's something I'm going to discuss on Cat Crazy with Amy Shojai. We're going to look up all the different companies like Perfect Fence and Catio. They make these really great constructions that you can take their stuff and enclose part of your yard up against an outbuilding or the garage. You can enclose a porch, even a small balcony in a condo. They can go out, but they can't be free to go out. So that's the answer to that. It's really just a death sentence. There's no unless.
Correct.
I mean, unless you really live 20 miles from a paved road and you have a giant barn full of delicious mice, in that case, yes. We have a call from Andy on the line. Andy, welcome to Cat Chat and Dog Talk. How can we help you?
Hi. We had adopted a great exotic cat. We live in New York. He came to us from Pennsylvania. And from Tennessee. And he was 4 years old when we got him. He's about six now. He gets very good veterinary care, and he is on the dental diet, the prescription dental diet.
Oh, dear.
Because he had some teeth, like plaque and the like, and reddening in the gums when we got him.
Oh, dear.
So now he does take a little bit of wet food, a little bit of fancy feast we give him every day. He doesn't really like it, but he'll eat a little bit of it. So, you know, I've been doing some reading. I read the Hodgkins book, I think.
Great. Elizabeth Hodgkins is a star. And she
migrating him to a fully wet food, but I wondered if there are some thoughts on how to make that transition as relatively
absolutely
as possible.
Well, the first thing that I'd say, other than the horrendous echo that I have, which is making me crazy. Sean, why don't you say some thoughts about dental food and how you actually need to go to your vet to have your gums and your teeth cleaned, that food is not a teeth cleaner, it's nutrition.
That's right. Now, you know, there are some pets that take these dental diets. They're not really, from a holistic perspective, diets that I like. I think the way they are designed, they certainly can help with tartar control, but I agree with Tracy that I prefer to feed them better quality food if the pet will let you do some easy dental care at home, whether it's brushing or putting some of these nice dental solutions in the mouth or in the water. That's good. And even though I know it can be expensive to clean pets' teeth, don't forget that no matter what you do at home, they still need to have that done professionally. So I think unless this dental diet is the only thing that's helping this pet decrease the frequency of dental care, which I find hard to believe, but it certainly could be a factor, I would try to slowly wean them to whatever natural food you can find in your area that's cost effective that the pet likes. You know, there are a number of diets out there. Tracy can mention some she likes, but there are a number of diets out there that can be very, very healthy for them. Mm-hmm. And I just try to spend about a 1 to 2 week period adding the new diet to the pet's food, cutting back on the current diet. And usually they will transition pretty well without vomiting, diarrhea, GI upset. And truthfully, these prescription type diets, while they can have their place in the treatment of severe diseases, I tend not to use them for most of my patients because of the reasons I've just given. They're not cheap, and they're not very tasty either. So I think the natural diets are just better. The pets enjoy them better, and probably you're going to have better health, including probably better dental health since you're feeding a better food.
Exactly. These are all extremely good points. The other thing that to think about, Andy, is that if you looked at the ingredients on the bag of that food and you said them aloud to me, the first ingredient would not be a protein because that's really expensive, and the very best dry foods start with a word like chicken or turkey or salmon. And I have yet to ever see a prescription food that began with that word. And there are often words on the label, which if you look in my book, The Cat Bible, or references to it in Elizabeth Hodgkin's book, Your Cat, which is a great book, and I'm thrilled you got it, you'll see that often those ingredients are in the very costly prescription diets and are shockingly cheap and poor, non-nutritious ingredients, just kind of like cheap fillers. In terms of the dog, not the cat, beg your pardon, not liking the Friskies, I would definitely go with a high-end food. I would definitely get a can of Woruva. That is one of our sponsors. They're the most amazing company. All the food is made in a human food factory and is super tasty. And a lot of the diabetic cat organizations and foster groups that are trying to get diabetic cats off of insulin, and the cats are hooked on kitty crack and they won't give it up. They don't even understand what real food is. They will try Woruva. So I think that it would be great if you would try either Cats in the Kitchen is one they make in a pouch, and it's got really fragrant odor. It's duck and chicken. I've been sneaking some onto my dog's food on their meatless day when they get just cottage cheese to kind of sexy it up. So I think you'll really love that, or he'll really love that. Probably get one can at a time of different flavors and find one that he really loves and begin to get him used to it. The thing with kitty crack, with dry food, unlike the transition that Sean mentioned, which is true if you're going from one kind of kibble to another, let's say with a dog, where you do want to go, you know, 80%, 50%, 40% of the old food until the new food is 100%. The problem with kitty crack is that all dry food, any dry food, is bad for cats and has this addictive element to it. It's sprayed with something to appeal on a brain level to the cat's craving center. So you actually don't want it involved in the new food idea. You have to go what we call cold turkey. Feed chicken, feed turkey, go cold turkey. So you basically need to remove it from the house. There was a wonderful caller who said, I did what you said. I put it in the trunk of the car in the garage. It's pretty much has to be that far away from their smell center. So the most important thing is to find a canned food that they find super tasty. Sometimes I'll say to people, go to the supermarket, buy the cheapest mackerel-based cat food, like the stinkiest, smelliest, fishiest one. Sometimes that will inspire them to give it a try. What the fancy human foodies, you know, they go to a restaurant and they go, oh, the mouthfeel of this is so fabulous. Well, for cats, the mouthfeel of wet, juicy, you know, moist food is a shock. If they've been eating fried, sprayed cardboard stuff, crunch, 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 and they're not really an animal that's meant to be crunching on like hard nuggets, it's what their mouth is used to. Something soft and gushy and tasty in a different way in their mouth is like, ew, what was that? So for some cats, it's kind of like a shock to the mouthfeel. So you're just going to have to do the best you can to find that wet food that he'll like. The Woruvas also have lovely gravy. A lot of the cheap supermarket brands have gravy that's made of chemicals and sugar and nasty stuff. The Woruva one is just the actual juice of that chicken or duck or whatever it is. And some of the kitties that are slow starters love to lick up the gravy.
And are there any? Let's say we try the Woruva. Do we pull away entirely and, you know, like hide the prescription diet then?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It needs to kind of leave the building, literally. I mean, there are people whose cats are so hooked that cold turkey.
So
I mean,
migrate cold turkey, as you say.
Yeah, it's not like a gradual thing. And the nice thing is that because it's the right food for the system, if there is a little bit of tummy trouble, it'll go away. It's okay to have some loose stool. It's really okay if the cat suddenly likes it so much they eat really fast and it comes back up. You know, the first few days you can have a little bit of that, but really it's like putting the right fuel in the Ferrari when you've been putting kind of like diesel with sugar in, and now you're going to give it that high test. It might takes a moment for the engine to go, oh, finally, I'm fed the right thing, but I think you'll see a great improvement. And I think you may have sent me your mailing address, but if you didn't, send it to me so that you can get these Whole Life Pet Treats. It's a great way to transition cats that have been on kitty crack because they are dry and crunchy. They just happen to be pure protein. So,
great. Yes, I did. Yeah, and thank you very much, both of you, for your thoughts on this.
Delighted to help
in.
You. And thanks for being a good cat dad. We will be right back after we take this break with the number to call, those of you out there. We'd love to have you join us, 888-627-6008. We'll be back in just a moment. This show is supported by Platinum Performance Canine Wellness Formula, which is a comprehensive nutritional foundation formula for all dogs, which addresses canine health at the cellular level, providing a special blend of more than 55 nutrients that improves the fundamental health of each of your dog's 12 trillion cells. Healthy cells mean a healthy dog. That's the Platinum difference. Platinum Performance Canine Wellness is a supplement scientifically proven to improve the cognitive ability of dogs in a study designed to measure their learning ability. When the dogs were tested on how well they remembered the skills learned in the first phase, dogs on Platinum Performance demonstrated superior memory by completing the task more quickly than the control group. To give your dog that mental edge, especially as she ages, go to RadioPetLady.com to get free samples and learn more. And there's Platinum Feline Formula for the kitties, too. Support for the show comes from Waruva, a family-owned company that makes canned food for cats and little dogs from ingredients we could eat ourselves. Because they think dogs and cats should eat as well as we do, so their foods are made in a human food facility. We salute Waruva's ethical decision to make no dry food because they know that for optimal wellness, small dogs don't need highly processed carbohydrates, and that true health for cats, who are obligate carnivores, means they should eat only meat and have no need for carbohydrates in their diet. In addition to all the delicious Waruva recipes, they also make Cats in the Kitchen in pouches and their more economical BFF, Best Feline Friend brand, using smaller-bodied fish for your cat's health. This show is brought to you by Vectra 3D for Dogs, a safe and effective topical anti-tick and flea treatment that you put on your dog's skin once a month to repel parasites. Vectra 3D has the newest technology. In scientific tests, Vectra 3D was shown to create a shield on your dog's skin to repel ticks and kill them fast and reliably for the entire month, unlike older products which don't last the full 30 days and only kill ticks that bite your dog, a bite which can actually transmit the many tick-borne diseases even without the parasites staying attached. With Vectra 3D, ticks are killed just by coming into contact with your dog, but it's still safe for the people in your family. Vectra for cats and dogs who live where there are no ticks is the anti-flea topical treatment that repels and kills fleas and also kills all three life cycles of the flea. Vectra is only available from practicing veterinarians. To learn more and find out how your own vet can get the Vectra products, go to RadioPetLady.com. We are back. The number to call, if y'all would like to share some of your thoughts, questions, ideas, comments, is 888-627-6008. Now, this next question is one I'm really want to know your answer to because I'm not familiar with heel allergy.
Okay.
This is from Teresa. Have been looking for the proper dosage of heel allergy for my cat. He was having food allergies. Now, actually, he probably wasn't having food allergies, Teresa. So I know you're listening because you're at work. So I know you can't call in, but I guess you can be naughty and listen. Food allergies account for not even 5% of the various allergic things that dogs and cats have. And to diagnose a food allergy, you have to do what Dr. Donna Spector calls an elimination diet. For 8 weeks, you can only feed, what is it, Sean, rice and chicken and not one other thing, no treats?
Yeah,
no,
you have to be very, very restrictive in that kind of a diet.
And then you add things in one by one.
One by one, that's right.
Yeah, so they're saying ended up being a grain allergy. Well, cats don't have grain allergies. They're actually obligate carnivores, so they only should be having meat. They don't do well. No cat does well with any grains, but they don't have an allergy to it. They actually lack the enzyme to fully digest it, but 99% of cats in America are eating dry food, so it's not an allergy. So he cut that out of his diet, and he's much better. Okay, cut it out of his diet, but how did they do it? They probably did something like grain-free kibble, which is still completely carbs and starch and doesn't solve the problem for an obligate carnivore, but I don't know what she did instead. Yes. You will tell me this, Teresa, I'm sure, in an email. But he still gets bad seasonal allergies. Okay, now that's
okay,
legitimate,
that's different.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the real thing. That's the real deal. My vet said it was fine to treat him with Heal, H-E-E-L, allergy, but he was unsure of the proper dosage because he doesn't normally subscribe. I think she means prescribe, homeopathy.
Yes.
Our cat is 9 pounds, five-year-old male. Can you advise me, Dr. Sean, on this or direct me someplace that has the dosage? My cat's brother has asthma and takes a third of a pill once a day, but they're almost the same weight. I was thinking of doing a quarter to a third of a pill, but wanted to get a professional opinion. I just want to say that asthma must be treated with an inhaler. Your brother, Teresa, has got to stop giving a homeopathic allergy pill to his cat and get to a proper vet who will prescribe an inhaler, right? Sean, inhaled medication is what is supposed to be used for asthmatic cats.
Well, if you've got a severe allergy, I would say that's correct. Many of my allergic patients that have mild asthma can do well on some of the herbs and homeopathics. But if these are cats that are having significant breathing problems, the inhaler is a must, steroids is a must, bronchodilators is a must. Plus, we use some of these other things to try to minimize their allergic response. So I think I'm pretty lucky in my practice in that the cats that I tend to see with asthma, and this is kind of a side note since we brought this up, but so far, knock on wood, the cats I've seen with asthma have all been mild enough to where I haven't had to use inhalers. But keep in mind, I'm not giving these cats vaccines every year. I'm not giving them bad food. I'm doing things
right
that minimize their allergic reaction anyway. So I don't know if part of it's just the population I see and the way that I try to keep pets healthy, or I've just been lucky for 20-something years. But so far, I've never had to use an inhaler.
Wow.
But I do agree with you. Many of these cats, that's actually become kind of the standard conventional therapy, that they need that assistance because they just have a lot of trouble breathing.
Which is a horrible feeling to anyone who has asthma as a
human.
That's
right.
I mean, allergies and asthma aren't even close to the same thing. They're really
No, asthma is basically – it is an allergic disease, but it's a potentially life-threatening way overreaction where the lungs are involved. We're not just talking about a simple skin disease or a little bit of sneezing. It's much, much more serious than that.
Right.
And, you know, I would say if the Heal allergy is helping the cat – that's fine, but she doesn't give us that much information. So, you know, we might need this cat further evaluated if he's not responding just to Heal allergy. But go ahead.
But I want to read – then she wrote
yes.
back. When I wrote to her and said, you got to call in, she said, oh, my God, I'm going to be working. But, yay, thank you so much. I'll be working during your show, so we'll not be able to call in, but I'm definitely going to tune in to listen. Maybe she means to the podcast.
Good.
Or maybe she has
Perfect.
A job that she wants to be fired from. But, you know, a lot of us have a job. We're like, please fire me. Let me get unemployment. I hate this job. My cat is named Mancy, yes, with an M, and is a five-year-old male. He came to us last summer and had a really hard life before that. He has horrible allergies that have flared up in the last few weeks. He had some allergies and other issues when we got him, so we switched to no grain in his diet. It seemed to help everything. I hope you mean in a can, Teresa. If you don't mean in a can, you got to go to the can. Now he's getting seasonal allergies, I think, she says, which is curious. Now, she lives in kind of an environment like you. We live in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's really dry and dusty here this time of year. I think it's related to the wind and dust. He's an indoor kitty, but I take him outside so we can roll on the dirt every few days. And if he's around grass, he will sneeze for days, which makes me think it is allergies. And Teresa, stop taking Mancy outside at all, for sure. My God. Jeez,
yes.
You're like throwing this in his face. She says, I want to give him Heal allergy pills, but not sure of the dosage. He's over 9 pounds. I'll be listening to the show and look forward to an answer. We love you, sweetheart, but you got to stop taking the cat outdoors to roll in dust, which is not really what we want him to be rolling in, and then have him have a sneezing attack. Explain about Heal allergy. I have Heal, H-E-E-L, they're sublingual suckable, there's a proper word for that, for arthritis, you know, like for joint pain from
yes.
I didn't know they made one for allergy. How does it work?
All right, so let me explain kind of how I treat these cats. I think the Heal allergy is fine. Heal is just the name of the company. Same kind of thing. Of course, in cats and dogs, we can't go the sublingual route. So I will usually liquefy those, or if the pet will take a pill, and I think really a whole pill for this cat would be fine. These are homeopathic medicines, so we're not going to hurt anything. Additionally, and I'm going to give myself a little plug, I would use one of the products at my website, Dr. Sean's Naturals, which you can go to Tracy's website, which I'll have Tracy give in a moment, to get the special code for a little discount. But I would do, in addition to that, the Zhao skin allergy support. Now, my guess is this cat's having skin allergies or environmental allergies, probably itchy. So I tend to use the herbal product first, the Zhao, XIAO, which is just a Chinese herbal formula, plus the Heal allergy, plus a good fish oil like Nordic Naturals, plus an antioxidant if we can do that. So those four things are pretty easy. The Heal allergy as a pill is fine. The Zhao is a nice liquid you can mix in with the wet food and cover up the taste. And then the Nordic Naturals is also a capsule, or you can make it into a liquid and a nice antioxidant. Those four things form the basis for me for most, if not all, of my allergy treatments. Then if that doesn't work, of course, if you have a holistic vet nearby, do that. We can do phone consults. We might need something stronger, prescription. But those things would be easy to give. The Heal has no side effects. The Zhao pretty much has no side effects unless the cat just doesn't like it. And, of course, Nordic Naturals is very safe as well. Those are easy things you can do. I agree with Tracy. This is probably not a food issue because that's pretty rare. But environmental allergies, things in the air, are really, really, really common.
And Teresa, you've seen it with your own eyes. Take them outside and create a sneezing attack. That's, you know, I think you're doing him a favor with the fresh air, but the air where you are isn't fresh to him. It's toxic. So don't be taking him out in that bad outdoor air. I have a couple of questions for you, Sean, particularly about antioxidant. As far as the Nordic Natural Fish Oil goes, Teresa, they sell it now in a bottle for small dogs and for cats. And the cap of it is an eyedropper so that you give the proper amount. It's called a serving, not a dose, because you have to be very careful the words you use around supplements. It's strictly regulated. I'm sure Sean, as a homeopathic holistic vet, knows these kind of like FDA rules. So the serving size when you're giving fish oil is critical. It's crucial. If you give too little, it's not going to have the effect that you need. And how to know exactly by the weight of your cat or dog is with this eyedropper. I have huge dogs, so they get capsules. It's each capsule equals 20 pounds of dog. But that's a better way to give the Nordic Naturals to a kitty. But when you say antioxidant, Sean, tell me specifically what you mean by that, because I think everybody hears that word and they go, yeah, antioxidant, and they think, you know, palm wonderful juice or something. What is it? What have you created? What do you sell? Because I think plugs for you is a good thing. How do you know? Otherwise, you go to, you know, Swanson Natural, or you go to Vitacost, and there's 9 million kinds of everything, and we don't know which ones are well made, have good ingredients, and are properly balanced for pets. So
is when I'm talking about antioxidants, of course, I should tell our listeners that Tracy behind the scenes is always bugging me to keep adding new products to my
online. Yes, I am.
Antioxidants are on my list. Fish oil is on my list. We just have to be patient, but I'm going to try to do the ones that I like. So for now, you're going to have to really talk to your veterinarian. Most veterinarians, even conventional doctors, have an antioxidant they use in their practice. And I'm talking usually about a balanced antioxidant that could have vitamins or minerals or herbs in there. Specific antioxidants, which I usually don't tell people just go buy one thing, could be things like CoQ10 or bilberry or astaxanthin, things like that. You can get those, but you're going to end up buying so many individual things unless we have a specific disease to treat. So really just follow up with your doctor and just see, hey, you know, what kind of antioxidant do you have? We just want something to reduce oxidative damage to the cells, which causes more inflammation, which causes these allergic responses or inflammation somewhere in the body.
Well, the problem is if they're not a homeopathic or a holistic vet, have antioxidants. Well, my vet has never said the word antioxidant. She doesn't even sell Nordic Naturals fish oil. I mean, you know, pretty much the straightforward.
Yes.
I mean, antioxidant? I don't think so, Sean. You live in this rarefied world where that's like breakfast table conversation. But for your average veterinarian, that they don't know any more what an antioxidant is any more than I do.
I mean, one that I've liked that I use in my practice is proanthazone made by Animal Health Options. But once again, you're usually going to have to go to find a veterinarian that has that kind of thing.
So, and you're telling me you don't have it?
Oh, I do. I do. It's just, once again, putting it on the website. So just keep bugging me, and I will do that.
I'm going to keep bugging him, folks.
I'm trying to do some private label things, but I can put on there what we have in our practice now, at least to give people some choices.
Yes.
I think.
Yes, because look, you have choices. You have the same 100 choices of any one item that we do, but you have narrowed down the companies that you trust and like. You like their quality. You like their packaging. You like their pricing. You like all the things about them, and you really can choose from a huge laundry list, if you will. So I just think it's so much nicer for us to say, what's the one you like? It's like when people say to me, what's the cat food you like? Right now, there's probably 25, 30, 35 great canned cat foods, good companies doing great stuff. I just know that David and Stacy started this company, Waruva. Their family makes it. It's completely their whole life. They don't make dry food. They don't do anything else. They're not trying to sell widgets and gadgets and, you know, shoes on a website. So, you know, you kind of have to follow your belief in the kind of ethics behind a company or the dedication or the passion, and you found those companies. So I want you to bring them to us, really, because otherwise we're in the dark here. We're kind of floundering around, and I'd like to know what antioxidants I should be taking too. When we come back, maybe Dr. Sean will tell me that, because I don't, other than my Nordic Naturals, I don't think I take an antioxidant help. We're going to be right back and find out what we should be taking. He doesn't actually have a human medical degree, but I say dogs and cats and people aren't all that different. 888-627-6008. We'll be right back. We'd love to hear your questions. Support for this show comes from The Honest Kitchen, a family-owned company that makes raw dehydrated pet foods from 100% human-grade ingredients, from food ingredients that are gently dehydrated to remove only the moisture, yet retain most of the natural nutrients. Everyone knows that the least processed foods are the most nutritious, and Lucy at The Honest Kitchen developed her unique foods based on this principle. The Honest Kitchen's all-natural, clean, safe products can assist cats and dogs with chronic health problems like itchy skin, ear infections, and GI upset, which are often linked to a poor quality or inappropriate diet. Just add water to the dry mix to create a fresh, warm, healthy meal for your cat or dog. Go to RadioPetLady.com for information about calling The Honest Kitchen for a complimentary consultation to find out which recipe is right for your pet and get free samples. This show is supported by the pheromone products Feelaway for cats and Adaptil for dogs. Pheromones are chemical communicators that replicate a signal of comfort in your pet's brain. And veterinary nutritionists often recommend Feelaway and Adaptil to help patients with behavior issues as a stress reliever that can help solve many common behavior challenges or even emotional discomfort you may not recognize. Feelaway for cats and Adaptil for dogs can also be comforting for newly adopted cats and dogs from stressful backgrounds, and especially for new puppies and kittens experiencing the fear and loneliness of leaving their litters. Feelaway diffusers and spray for cats help with feline behavior issues in a multi-cat household for out-of-litter box issues and to get a cat used to her carrier for travel or vet visits. Adaptil for dogs helps alleviate anxiety and stress-related symptoms whether your dog is at home, in a car, or out in the world. Adaptil comes in a diffuser, spray, and the most effective way, a collar. Veterinary animal behaviorists often recommend Feelaway and Adaptil to help patients with behavior issues. You can find the pheromone products through the link at RadioPetLady.com, where there's a discount to Dr. Sean's online store, PetCareNaturally.com. VaxaCheck wants to know, are you worried about the harmful side effects of over-vaccinating your dog? But is your vet worried whether your dog still has protection from previous vaccinations? VaxaCheck takes the worry out of keeping your dog safe. Avoid the risks of automatically revaccinating by asking for VaxaCheck, a blood titer test done right in your veterinarian's office while you wait. It shows whether your dog has immunity to the deadly core diseases, distemper, parvovirus, and hepatitis. If she has the antibodies in her blood, you don't need to revaccinate. But if she doesn't have protective immunity to one of the diseases, then you revaccinate only against that one illness. VaxaCheck should be used on every puppy to confirm that she actually got the protective antibodies from her puppy shots, which are not guaranteed to be 100% effective. Shelters and rescues should use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. For your dog's safety and your peace of mind, ask for a VaxaCheck test at your dog's yearly checkup so you and your vet make the best decision about long-term health. VaxaCheck for cats is coming soon.
Dr. Sean, we're back, and the number for those of you that want to call is 888-627-6008. Sean, you told me about VaxaCheck, and I was kind of excited about it because I had never heard of it, and it turns out it's brand new. And when I mentioned it to my vet, it was really funny because she said, you know, I've been hoping for years for some sort of a way to check titer levels, and I just came back from the Western Vet Conference, and I didn't see anything. And then her vet tech went in the back and came out with this beautiful brochure all about VaxaCheck. So she immediately ordered it. But it's pretty new, and yet you as a homeopathic vet hoping not to vaccinate unnecessarily must be especially glad that it exists, no?
Yeah, and what's nice is that we can get the results literally in the office that day if we want without having to wait for the diagnostic lab, which charges 2 to 3 times as much or more to give us the results. So I really, really like it. The test is easy. As we mentioned before, they do have a cat version that is just waiting final USDA approval. And I know Marty at VaxiCheck is hoping to have that out the next month or two. It's just literally waiting to come out. I know I've been wanting it. I've been bugging him about it for a few months.
Because so many cats have – there's so many vaccinations or vaccines that they could use to protect them. There are a lot of cat diseases. So
yes,
they really do need to be protected because some of the diseases are truly deadly. I think it's really great that they have it. Have you found that your patients are interested in trying it, or they're a little baffled by the idea behind it?
Well, people come to me because they've heard about me. Maybe they heard about me on the show, or they've read what I've done, some of my books and articles. And so they're already coming in, for the most part, understanding titer testing. Those that may not be quite familiar with it know that we do natural therapies. When I talk to them about not vaccinating every year, this smile comes over their face like, you know what, we don't vaccinate our kids every year. This is what we want to do. And so I explain the titer test, and it makes perfect sense to them. We're measuring their pet's own blood for positive antibodies to prior year's vaccination. So basically, the pet is telling me, what does it need that year? And in most cases, the answer is not a whole lot as far as vaccines go.
Well, I think it's really a terrific tool. And more of that would be a lot better because then you've got protection without overdoing it. Now, here's a question that came from Prem. And Prem, I hope you're listening because I think you need to get to the vet like first thing tomorrow morning. I'm a little shocked that somebody who's dog's eyes are bright red and there's gunk in them, quote unquote,
oh,
gunk.
That's not
isn't
good.
Going to her vet. The eyes are infected, Prem. You have an ocular infection, which is a terrible thing. It's unbelievably painful to the dog. And, you know, anything wrong with your eye that isn't treated can lead to much more serious problems, including blindness if you just don't treat it. So here's Prem's question. I have a Lhasa Apso who is healthy overall. She's 14 years old, very active and sweet. Recently, with all the winds blowing up and spring dusting its pollens, my girl's eyes have turned red and itchy with gunk. Now, gunk, if you mean stuff gunking up
some
the eyes.
Some sort of discharge,
discharge is a sign of infection. Then she said, I use a natural eye product, Similisan, S-I-M-I-L-I-S-A-N, to help. But it hasn't, and her eyes are not clearing up. Well, that's because you probably need antibiotic ointment or drops. She says, I know Benadryl can be used to help with itchy skin and gunky red eyes. No, it can't. Benadryl doesn't help gunky red eyes, Prem. Benadryl is an antihistamine, but if the eyes are red and gunky, you need to see your vet. She wants to know how much of a pill of Benadryl she can use on a 22-pound Lhasa. You can call your vet and get to your vet and have them figure out what's wrong with her eyes. Am I right, Sean?
I agree. I mean, I think, you know, while Benadryl can certainly help with allergic reactions, first of all, I really don't like giving out drug dosages to people because I don't really think about this dog. She mentions it's a Lhasa. This means it's a bug-eyed dog, which means all sorts of things can go wrong with this dog, including corneal ulcers and scratches, which are actually the most common cause of red eyes in these dogs. And that, to me, is somewhat of a medical emergency. First of all, it's painful. Dogs can go blind overnight.
Yes.
So I agree with Tracy. You know, don't walk. Run to your vet. I hope she wrote today. If she wrote a few days ago, I'm really concerned about this dog. But go tomorrow and see somebody and get their proper diagnosis. The other thing I would say, while we're talking about eyes, okay,
good.
Many veterinarians just look at the eyes, kind of make a diagnosis and send something home. And as a result, I get to see on a second or third opinion basis dogs that have had chronic eye gunk, as she puts it, that have one of two diseases, either corneal ulcers that have never been diagnosed, which is very painful, or KCS, which is dry eye. So make sure your vet checks your dog's tear production and stains the corneas of the eye, the outer part of the eye, to look for ulcers and scratches. To not do that on just about every eye case, to me, is malpractice. And there are just too many pets treated incorrectly that in some cases may lose their sight because of that.
In fact, corneal ulcers, which I have suffered from for no one can figure out why, off and on for years. My eye doctor has.
Have they checked your tear production? I'm sure they did.
Yep.
Okay.
They cannot figure it out. Checked my immune system. It's just some baffling thing. And they gave me these antibiotic drops that used to have to be infused in the hospital every 4 hours, and then they came on the market. But he told me that something like that there's only 8 cells thickness of your cornea, and if this bacteria eats through those cells, you go blind. So, and you can get a corneal ulcer from all kinds of things. It can be an abrasion, but it can also be an autoimmune thing. The lids cannot, are too oily. So blepharitis things hang around on the lids. But if the eyes are just so precious. You don't just fool around with some completely inappropriate human like antihistamine. You go to the vet if there's anything wrong with the eyes. And it's also incredibly painful, light sensitive. Every time you blink, it feels like there's sand in your eyes. Not a good thing.
No.
So, Prem, get thee to thy doctor. Our number is 888-627-6008. I now have our last email for the night, and then we can chat about some random topics that we haven't talked about for a while. This one is from Kim in Kelowna, British Columbia, Canada. I hope I pronounce that properly, K-E-L-O-W-N-A. And this is another one where it's just kind of – I'm definitely going to bring this question to Dr. Sean Delaney on Pet Food Advisors. This is just his kind of question, and even Donna. So it'll be interesting to see how each of you looks at this information. I see some red flags here. The first red flag is you have a German Shepherd who recently developed stomach issues, 9 years old. You're lucky it's only recently.
Yes.
Kim, because German Shepherds genetically have some of the most horrendous digestive issues. I mean, life-threatening digestive issues. She said he was puking all the time and lost about 12 pounds. It's serious stuff. I mean, really serious. So they did do x-ray, blood work, and an ultrasound that were inconclusive. And he was finally diagnosed with IBS. Well, the first thing I would say, because Dr. Donna and I discussed this recently on the Expert Vet on Mondays, and you can listen, Kim, in the podcast library, is EPI, which is a genetic problem that's about malabsorption, right, Sean? I mean,
yeah, basically they just don't have enough pancreatic enzymes to digest and absorb their food properly.
And then you have to go to a vet. Well, it's better to go to a vet, I think, like Sean, who's got pancreatic supplements that are from really good sources. But I mean, you basically have to give the dog pancreatic supplements amongst other things.
Correct.
So here's what the vet puts the dog on. The vet put him on prescription Royal Canin hypoallergenic wet food from the vet, also on prednisone. Okay, so a hypoallergenic wet food. The dog didn't really have allergies. The dog has an underlying problem digesting anything. That's what German Shepherds have very often, right, Sean? It's not about one food or another that's a problem. It's food is a problem.
Yeah, and once again, German Shepherds, I love them to death, but they're just accidents waiting to happen because they've been so inbred. Unless you get some from Germany, those tend to be healthier pets. But I think we need to first of all find out what is our diagnosis. I'm okay with hypoallergenic foods if that's the correct treatment. But I think enzymes for all these pets is great. I think probiotics for all these pets is great. Sometimes herbal products, glutamine, some amino acids can be helpful. But once again, is it an enzyme problem? You mentioned IBS. It's really IBD, inflammatory bowel disease.
Right.
That may be a dog that needs a little steroid short term while we're working on diet and supplements to prevent us from using steroids long term. So we have to do, once again, keep going back to this, sound like a broken record. What is the diagnosis, and let's treat to correct the disease, not just treat what we think is going on and hope it works.
and just go after the symptom. Well, yes. Here's what happened. She went to a new holistic vet in Canada who wants all him right. to be eating a homemade diet, and then we will try and deal with getting him off the prednisone. So he's on some prednisone, it turns out, which okay. she had mentioned
the IBD,
before.
Potentially,
right,
yeah.
The IBD. She thought it was IBS. Maybe in Canada they refer to it as IBS. Who knows?
Well, IBS is technically irritable bowel syndrome, but so many people call IBD IBS. So I always try, if somebody says their pet has IBS, which I think I've seen once in my life in a pet, see it all the time in people, I want to make sure I know what they're
right.
to. So I think the problem when we're dealing with these acronyms and letters that represent shorthand is while there are standards that doctors use, sometimes they're not consistent. They're certainly not consistent among the general non-medical public. So I think it's always worthwhile. And I will ask people, when you say IBS, what disease are you talking about? Because right. I never see IBS, but I see IBD every day.
Right, right. Yeah, so it becomes a kind of a catchphrase.
Yeah.
So here's the part that really knocked me for a loop, if you will. What she decides to feed him is a homemade diet. I'm like,
okay.
Oh my God, I would be having irritable bowels with all the things this dog's being fed. Weaned him off the prescription food. Okay.
Good.
He's now been eating turkey, egg, chicken, rice, oatmeal, mixed beans, pinto, kidney, garbanzo, and white beans. I have never heard of beans being given to a dog, least of all one with digestive problems ever. Broccoli, cauliflower, carrots, and pumpkin. She's been giving him all this stuff for 2 weeks with no issues, no puking,
right.
drinking good, stools good. Wow, this dog could I apparently digest everything in the kitchen sink and the garbage can. He's also taking a probiotic. Good.
Good.
I'm planning on purchasing your book, The Dog Bible, this weekend. Well, that's very nice. Thank you so much, Kim. But I'm not sure how much your book involves making homemade food. Well, I can explain that in a minute. I'm actually looking for a good book that's exclusive to making homemade food. Have you got any suggestions? Well, I'm delighted you get The Dog Bible because it'll actually explain nutrition to you and IBS versus IBD versus these things, because I think that a little education in these areas is helpful to understand whether your dog's really been diagnosed or just kind of put into a grab bag. But I don't know how you feel about this. You may feel entirely differently. We've never talked about the concept of homemade diets. I don't believe that people should have a homemade diet with this crazy, I'll have a little of this and a little of that. And by the way, always put in some pumpkin. This is some idea that has – I don't know where that idea ever came from, okay? To me, pumpkin's something you carve at Halloween. I don't know what it's doing in dogs.
It's probably for fiber source.
I know. Yes. But you know what? If you want a fiber source, you could even grind up – put in some grass cuttings. I don't know. I just don't get spending $3 a can on pumpkin. It's just goofy. It doesn't have more fiber than anything else. There's lots of things with more fiber than pumpkin. So then the thing to me is you shouldn't home cook without using a proper supplement, an overall supplement, because dogs have off-the-chart needs for calcium and fat and various other things that you can't possibly provide no matter what you're feeding them. And
guess is, and I'm hoping that when she's working with her holistic vet, this may be something the doctor is putting the dog on to see if it helps with the digestive issues, with the hopeful goal of balance the diet appropriately, including the use of some additional supplements. I get a lot of people that like to feed homemade, and I'm kind of okay with that if they don't mind going to all the work and trouble and trying
exactly.
to buy organic. But I always tell them, we've got to make sure we're balancing it, and many times – it does cost more when I'm sending you home with 5 supplements that technically would already be in a prepared diet. But if you want to go to the trouble and like it, I really don't care, as long as you're on a good diet.
Well, Dr. Sean Delaney, whose show The Pet Food Advisor is on Thursday, he actually was a professor at UC Davis for a decade teaching nutrition. And he wrote the only textbook that exists for veterinarians that isn't underwritten by a pet food company. Until now, all the veterinary nutrition textbooks were given out free to students and had the name of a pet food company in the back. Mm-hmm. And his that he wrote with, I think, 6 other vets is the only one that's an independent one. So the information and advice in it is just based on science and so forth. And he started a company called Balance It. And it's a company that Donna Spector has used in doing second opinions. And you might like to know about it too, Sean. They do consultations to – once they help
they would obviously help in figuring out what is wrong with an animal. But then they come up with a diet and recipes and ingredients and amounts that are correct for that animal in a as a therapeutic, homemade, personalized diet. And then they sell Balance It, which is the supplement, which balances whatever you're feeding with this right proportion of the various things, calcium being really high on the list that dogs need. And I think that that's, you know, a really nice solution. I'm not a fan of these cutesy-tootsy dog cookbooks. Many have been sent to me. Would I like to have them as a guest on my NPR show, Dog Talk? Not really. How often? How much can you say about ground turkey, brown rice, and carrots? I mean, you know, it's like these diets have cute names and involve some cute extra amount of work. But in the end of the day, it needs to be a certain proportion of protein, a certain proportion of simple carbs, and some vegetables, and if you want, some tiny amounts of various kinds of fruit. But it's still completely inadequate. You have to have omega-3 fish oil. I mean, that goes without saying. And then you need some sort of supplementation. So you don't need a cookbook. You know, there's only three or four kinds of protein that are probably readily available. Three or four kinds of fiber, whether it's rice, oatmeal, or sweet potato, or what have you, and so forth and so on. I think giving this dog all these mixed beans is like nuts. I just don't get it.
I mean, I think it's an alternative protein source. And yeah, you have to worry about the gas too, for sure.
And it's an incomplete protein, so it's a curious one, Kim. But I would definitely say that a consultation with the people at Balance It would probably, for someone like you who's willing to go to this amount of trouble, would probably be a really nice solution. That's what I'm thinking. We're going to go to a break. When we get back, Dr. Sean, I want you to tell me something interesting and cool that happened in your clinic this week. I want to hear something brilliant, some fabulous diagnosis you made. That's always interesting. We'll be right back after this break. This show is brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Read the ingredients on the label of your own dry dog food. Can you identify what's in there? Halo uses no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals in any of their products. Halo is a private company partially owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they genuinely are dedicated to keeping your pet happy and healthy inside and out. The company emphasizes giving back by making impressive charitable donations through freekibble.com to shelters and rescues because they believe that less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition too. Halo is the only kibble I feed my own dogs because Halo uses real meat in their kibble. No scary mystery ingredients that are permitted in rendered meal. There are even shreds of real vegetables along with the dry nuggets. It's why I'd love you to try Halo too. This show is also brought to you by Nordic Naturals for people and their pets. Nordic Naturals has been providing people around the world with high-quality omega-3 oils for decades, with third-party testing for purity and freshness. Research has shown that even the best diets are deficient in the essential fatty acids found in omega-3 oils, and daily supplementation helps maintain optimal health for all members of the family. In fact, Nordic's prenatal DHA and baby's DHA products are endorsed by the American Pregnancy Association, which is a welcome endorsement for those who will want to add omega-3 fish oil to their pet's bowl since they view their cats and dogs as their fur kids. Nordic Naturals Omega Pet products bring the same health benefits to the cats and dogs in your family. For more information, visit RadioPetLady.com. This show is part of the Radio Pet Lady Network, the best pet radio shows in the world. If you're enjoying our show, please go to RadioPetLady.com to see all the other live call-in shows I co-host. Wednesday is Dog Travel Experts, exploring all the ways to get out of the house with your dog from around the block to around the world with Paris from Dog Tipper. Also on Wednesday is Four-Legged Life with Arden Moore, who advocates great ways to enjoy life with your dogs and cats while keeping them safe. Thursday is Pet Food Advisors with Dr. Sean Delaney, a famous veterinary nutritionist with advice about what to feed your pets. And then it's A Dog's Life, discussing dog behavior with trainer Greg Kleva. Mondays, there's The Expert Vet with Dr. Donna, giving second opinions on hard-to-treat medical problems, and Cat Crazy with Amy Shojai, who is a certified animal behaviorist who is crazy about cats. If you cannot listen to any show live, just send your questions to RadioPetLady@gmail.com and we'll answer them on the air. You can listen later to the After Show podcast in the library at RadioPetLady.com. We are back. Our number is 888-627-6008 if you want to give us a shout. But Sean, tell us something interesting that happened in not this week because it's only Tuesday, but maybe in the last week since we had our last show. What's been going on?
Well, what's been going on? My own cat, Dysa, unfortunately, I just diagnosed her with a tumor in her chest.
Oh my gosh. She is
an older cat, and I just heard a heart murmur on her, and we did an ultrasound on her last week. My wife helps me out at work a little bit. I said, honey, why don't you just go in the room? You can watch the ultrasound. It'll be very interesting. Not thinking they were going to find this huge tumor in her chest pressing on her heart. So I'm dealing with what every cat owner deals with in my practice if they have to go through possibly cancer. The good news is Dysa's fine. She doesn't know she's got any problems. Based on a number of things my wife and I thought about and talked about and knowing our cat, we've just decided, you know, I'm just going to treat her totally naturally. She seems fine. I've got her on a little bit of prednisone to help reduce any inflammation and maybe shrink the tumor a little bit. And she's fine. I'm fine. You know, my wife's kind of upset because now she knows, you know, the verdict's in, so to speak. I don't know how long Dysa has. I don't think she's going to pass anytime soon. But I would say possibly 6 to 12 months just as a guess. I don't know. But she seems happy and healthy, and so I'm good with that too.
And, of course, you don't know how long that tumor's been there, right?
Well, several years ago, she had a swollen lymph node that I saw on a radiograph, on an x-ray. And I don't know if this has just progressed to that or what's going on. But knowing the size of this, I bet it's been there at least a year. And like I said, she seems fine, so if it's possibly been there that long, maybe it's not even a cancerous tumor. But I know she wouldn't want to go through, you know, cracking open her chest and surgery and being in the hospital.
Right.
I just know her, so I have to treat her knowing how I know her. But she's fine. Like I said, I'm not overly worried. You know, this is our first cat. I was always raised with dogs, not cats. So for me, this is a great first cat because she's a rag doll and they're just as sweet as can be. And, you know, we will miss her. She's a very sweet older cat. But she seems to be doing okay, which is the good news. So I did want to talk about, I'm glad we brought this up. Do we have any callers or can I go to an interesting story?
Go to a story.
Let me take a quick sip of water because this is going to be one that's going to make you laugh again.
Oh, excellent. You know, I do like a good laugh, as does everybody else.
That's true. All right. So I thought I would talk for a few minutes about something I used to talk about on my Dr. Sean show with Martha and Sirius XM probably at least a couple times a year.
Okay.
And I bring this up whenever this kind of happens to me. So this is a good time to bring it up. So I thought I would talk about malpractice. Now, obviously, I'm not being sued for malpractice, but this will lead into my story.
Okay.
There are many people that kind of wonder what constitutes malpractice, whether we're talking about a veterinarian or a conventional medical doctor for people. And so often when I see people coming in for second opinions, they're often upset with their doctors. And I have to kind of dance around if their doctor did something right or wrong and kind of deal with their client's feelings, et cetera. Understanding that there's always two sides to a story. If they don't bring me medical records, I can't really comment at all because I don't have the doctor's side of the story there.
Right.
If I believe there was something done incorrectly, I always encourage these clients to at least write to the state board if they want to and just start a complaint and let things be investigated and see whatever happens. But there's a difference between a patient, or in this case, a pet owner patient, being upset at the doctor and something rising to the level of malpractice. And most people think if the doctor makes a mistake, that's malpractice. That's totally incorrect. Malpractice is a legal definition that really doesn't have as much to do with medicine as it has to do with the law. And basically, for malpractice to occur, the doctor either has to do something another doctor would not have done under those circumstances, or maybe failed to do something he should have done that another doctor of equal competence would have done. So that's part number one.
Okay.
And here's the part that's very, very important. And by doing something you shouldn't do or failing to do something you should have done, it has to result in measurable impact or measurable harm to the patient. For example, let's suppose I'm doing surgery and I leave a sponge inside the dog.
Okay,
well, that's incorrect. We shouldn't be leaving sponges in dogs. But if nothing happens to your dog, that's not malpractice. That was a mistake, but it's not malpractice. If your dog gets sick and dies as a result, that could be malpractice because there's measurable damage or harm, or in this case maybe death, to the patient. So it can't just be something you don't like or the doctor screwed up because we're all human and make mistakes. There has to be some measurable harm that we can prove directly resulted from the omission or commission of the medical act. So I think it's important for people to understand you can't just, well, yes, you can sue anybody you want, but you're not going to win unless you can prove there's actual harm. Now, that's point number one. Point number two is the burden of proof is always on the person making the complaint. So if you believe I'm guilty of malpractice, burden of proof means when you go to court, you have to have another veterinarian that you're going to pay a lot of money to be your expert witness and testify that I did something that was malpractice. Just because you think it was wrong or your lawyer thinks it's wrong, without an expert there, if I'm the only one that shows up who's the vet, I'm going to win because I'm the expert there. Nobody else is around. And, of course, the phone goes off in the middle of my conversation.
Naturally.
But that's okay.
Naturally. That's all right. It's part of
I try to remember to always put these phones out. But that leads me into my conversation tonight about a letter I got from our state board a week ago about a complaint that was filed against me. Now, I should say that every veterinarian I know has a complaint filed against them sometime.
Okay.
I've had probably one complaint every, I don't know, few years. Okay. The good news is none of the complaints have any basis in fact. None of them have anything to do with the medical care. It's always some client who's upset about something. So, Tracy, I thought I would share with you this interesting story, and you will crack up when I tell you this, but I promise you this is a true, legitimate complaint. And part of the reason – I'm going to jump ahead here. Part of the reason that I think there are doctors who probably are quacks – who shouldn't be practicing is because the State Board of Medicine, the State Board of Dentistry, the State Board of Veterinary Medicine has to deal with these foolish complaints, which they get multiple times a day. And they don't have enough time to deal with real serious potential malpractice. So when I encourage people to write to the State Board, they have to have a pretty legitimate gripe. Just because you don't like your vet or he charged you too much or you don't like his receptionist, you don't need to bother the state board for that. But that's often, actually most of the complaints they get is this foolishness. So here's a complaint I got from a client that I saw 1 month ago. Only saw the client once, came in because they were very upset with their current vet. They have a little one-year-old, a little bit older schnauzer who they blame the other vet for causing all these problems after her spay, which I don't think this had anything to do with her spay. But after her spay, she had bladder stones, she had something else, she went through several surgeries, they spent a lot of money, so they were upset with the vet. Plus, they wanted a more natural approach for her current problem, which is she's limping on one leg. All right, that's fine. So I see the dog, we talk about the bladder stones it's had, it's got some ongoing bladder issues, it had one other problem I forgot, and it's got this limp. So I respected the fact and appreciated the fact they didn't want to use any medicine. They wanted to try to avoid surgery, so I told them, you know, I can't promise you that, but your dog's not in pain right now. The limp has only gone on for a short period of time. Let's try some natural things first. If it doesn't work, we can talk surgery, we can talk conventional medicines, whatever. I'm very open to whatever the people want to do and kind of guide them to make the right decision. So that's fine. So I sent them home with several supplements for the bladder problem, which was an ongoing issue. I forgot the other problem, and of course, several things for the limp. I think we might have also done a little acupuncture and cold laser therapy. So that's fine. So I'm going to leave a lot out, but I'm going to jump ahead. So I get this complaint from the state board, and their complaint, and here's what's ridiculous. They're complaining that my therapies did not work. Well, it gets better. First of all, there's no guarantee anybody's therapies work. That's not a legitimate complaint, okay? But here's what's funny. They're complaining my supplements I sent home didn't work, but they admit they never gave any of the supplements to the dog.
Oh, come on.
There were too many pills to give, so we chose not to give the dog any supplements. And by the way, those supplements
didn't work.
So this is a complaint that I now have to deal with, and it's not a big deal. I spend about 30 minutes of my time writing a letter back to the board, but this is the kind of foolishness I shouldn't be dealing with, the board shouldn't be dealing with, but I've never had someone complain that my therapies don't work, and they chose not to give them. Now, what's interesting is I was at a veterinary convention recently talking to some other vets. Another vet overheard us. He goes, and you're surprised at this? Because we all know clients are just a little bit nutso. So I'm like, no, I shouldn't be surprised at this at all, because the best complaint I've ever had against me, and you'll really like this, this was about a 5-page handwritten complaint by a gentleman who came to me 10 years ago for a supplement trial that I was running for a supplement company that makes a product that helps control Alzheimer's in dogs and cats. So I'd never seen him before. He was one of about 50 people that came in, gave this supplement to his cat, and I don't even remember if it worked or not, but he wrote this complaint to the state board, and he was very serious. And he complained that the cat died after taking the supplement. It wasn't from the supplement. He said that I'm a member of a mind control cult. And I told him I was going to use my mind control to make his cat drop dead of a heart attack on Saturday, August the 10th at 10 o'clock in the evening. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened to the cat. Now, he also told the state board he didn't really investigate this seriously because he knows that all vets in Texas belong to the same mind control. He knows it's true because he was at a reception once and one of our conservative congressmen admitted to him, yes, all the vets in Texas are members of a mind control cult. They kill cats and dogs with their minds. So the state board, now when they're like, you're the vet that does the mind control, aren't you? It's like, yeah, that's me.
That's me, all right.
But my whole point in telling these stories is not just to get a laugh because they are humorous, but, you know, please don't waste your time and the state board's time when they really should be investigating doctors who are practicing medicine incorrectly, who really are hurting or maybe possibly injuring, killing pets with this kind of foolishness. Because I know right now the state board's going to take my side. I know nothing's going to come of this. These people are either just upset and wanted to blow off steam, or maybe they just want to waste time. But there's no legitimate complaint here that they possibly could think they're going to win anything on. So that was my kind of funny story for the week, along with my sad story about my cat. But she's doing well, so that's fine.
Well, poor little thing, her. But, you know, this is a really interesting story, because when someone comes to a homeopathic holistic vet and says, I don't want to do traditional Western medicine, I want to do homeopathic, I want to do things that aren't, you know, chemically based, and you say, great, I have some things to suggest for you. Anybody seeking that out knows for a fact, well, first of all, there's no guarantee that when you take Excedrin, it'll take your headache away, okay? Openers. There's no guarantee that any drug or pill will do what it hopes to do. In fact, many have horrible side effects in the chemical Western kind of medicine. But to think that homeopathic and holistic, even going to acupuncture and chiropractic and cold laser, I guess, could fall in that category, although it's kind of high tech.
Yeah.
I think 50% is the amount of, you know, really provable, measurable value or validity that's sort of just a number I've heard bandied about. So that when people go to get natural supplements or therapy for themselves or their pets, there should be a kind of low expectation. It's milder, it's gentler, it's more natural, and, you know, it's not like taking some heavy-duty antibiotic or whatever the equivalent might be, some heavy-duty painkiller made of chemicals where you can, within 15, 20 minutes, see some effect.
I think first of all, people need to understand you actually have to do the therapy for it to work. So,
well, there's that.
The other thing people need to understand is, unless you're looking for an overnight drug effect, like you mentioned, Tracy, I'm looking at long-term healing, which means things need to take time. Now, I'm all in favor of making the pet feel better quickly. I don't have any problem with that. But if you stop at that, I haven't done anything better than anybody else. So I think we need to understand that long-term healing literally is a daily, lifelong process,
right. And
we need to be very patient with that and just kind of see what happens, really, just kind of see how we go. But, you know, once again, why they got upset, maybe they thought, well, gee, we spent some money, he sent us home with all these pills, the dog won't take the pills. Of course, as a reminder to people, if you tell your doctor up front, my dog doesn't like pills or doesn't like liquids or the cat can't take this, that kind of helps. So I kind of like to know that up front. That'd be helpful. Don't get upset after the fact. And, you know, I've had people complain over the years, you know, the doctor sent me home with these three liquids. Well, my cat didn't like liquids. I'm thinking, well, wouldn't you want to tell me that before you leave the office with three vials of medicine? I mean, that's kind of common sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, I expect my patients, my pet owners, to be partners. I have something, and people have heard this before, that we call the medical triangle. It's me, the pet owner, and the pet.
Right.
All of those elements are equally important. I'm no more important than anything else. My goal is to give information, to try to use my knowledge and skill to recommend and prescribe the best therapies, but the pet owner needs to give them. The pet needs to take them. And I know my cat doesn't want to take a lot of things, okay? So we have to kind of deal with that. So we're all in this together, and I'm not going to blame you if you can't give your pet something. But at the very least, you know, kind of let me know that ahead of time and we'll kind of work together and do what's best.
it is sort of, there is a common sense element missing because the person has stood there while you said, I'm going to sell you this or make you this or prepare that.
And well, yeah, leave the office with these vials of things and know they're not going to help. Well, you know, what kind of an idiot are you? I mean, we need
why not say, you know what, hang on, I don't think I better take that because X. And you'd say, okay, let me come up with an alternative.
Yeah, it's not a big deal.
It's really kind of amazing. And also, you know, schnauzers, I forget what – there's a number of things that they're genetically predisposed to, and for all I know, it's bladder stones. I mean
– It is. You're right.
I mean, I remember that just because Scooby-Doo, my big Weimaraner, had life-threatening bladder stones when he was only about a year old. And so I remember trying to learn a lot about the different kinds of bladder stones, what causes them, how to deal with them, diet, not diet, and so forth and so on. And I do remember that schnauzers are prone to them. So, yeah. You know, people will say, they can say, oh, my dog was spayed and then got bladder stones. The two things don't go together at all, by the way. But by the same token, you could have just bought a new fridge and then the dog got bladder stones. You say it's that refrigerator did it. I mean, it's about as logical.
And, you know, like I said, if people have a valid complaint, I certainly want to hear it. But there's no valid complaint when you admit you're not giving the medicine and the pet doesn't get better. I mean, you know, when the state board looks at these people like, these are idiots we've got to respond to now. And, of course, they'll probably get upset at the state board that they just take up for vets. But it's like, if you have a valid complaint, the board can actually maybe intervene and do something and make some corrections. But – you know, people, you know, they like to complain, I guess, and that's fine. It just takes a little time out of our schedule. And really, the thing that frustrates me is I want the board to investigate real serious problems, and they can't when they're investigating foolishness. And, you know, I want quacks out there to be discovered as well. I want them to be, you know, disciplined, and if we can correct some problems, of course, do that. But when you wonder why there's so many, maybe not so many, but certainly a number of doctors that maybe are doing things incorrectly and hurting pets, well, you know, when they're investigating this kind of foolishness, you can't really expect them to have time to investigate serious things.
It's a ridiculous distraction. When we come back from our break, I want you to talk a little about the quack that you first worked for, because you talked about the first job you had out of vet school, and you knew for a fact this guy was a quack. And I'm wondering, what is your quackometer? I think that would be great for us all to know, the kind of what are your 1 through 5 on your quackometer, so people can say, you know what, I found myself a quack, and I need to find something better. We'll be right back after this break. This show is also brought to you by Whole Life Pet, a family-owned and run company that makes treats for dogs and cats from one pure protein, human-grade, antibiotic-free poultry, meat, fish, and cheese that is sustainably grown and harvested. They never use additives, chemicals, or preservatives. The small batches of treats are made by hand in their state-of-the-art freeze-drying machines. Whole Life Pet personally knows the providers of all their ingredients, a concept they call farm to friend. All their products are sourced, produced, and packaged in the United States, assuring quality and safety, along with the support for the American economy. Everyone who listens to the show is welcome to a free box of Whole Life Pet treat samples. Just send me your mailing address to radiopetlady@gmail.com. Precious Cat Litter is privately owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian whose litters are designed to appeal to kitties and protect their health. His renowned Cat Attract litter has a blend of herbs which entice cats into the litter box and overcome litter box problems, the number one problem people have. Cat Attract has saved thousands of cats' lives because it's often used by rescue groups to teach cats to use their litter box again, since that's the main reason people have given up on them. Respiratory relief litter is low dust for pussycats with asthma, which makes it healthy for people and other pets in the family, too. Senior and long-haired cat litters protect the health and comfort of those pussycats. Precious Cat donates litter to shelters and rescues across the country. Dr. Sean's online store, PetCareNaturally.com, has many of the supplements Dr. Sean mentions on the show. He also has Feel Away for cats and Adaptyl diffusers and collars for dogs, the full-strength products you will find only from a veterinarian. Dr. Sean has his own veterinary clinic in Texas where he practices integrative holistic medicine, and he can consult with your vet to help you integrate a more holistic approach and alternative medicine into your pet's care. Dr. Sean has also developed a number of healthy natural products for his patients, like itch relief shampoo, all-natural herbal earwash, olive leaf plus, and CI support, supplements to support the immune system for pets with cancers and immune diseases. Go to RadioPetLady.com to get the 10% off code for Dr. Sean's store at PetCareNaturally.com and take advantage of monthly specials. We are back, and before you give your quackometer, I just want to remind people that it's the first of the month next Tuesday night, so Dr. Sean has a busman's holiday. You could call in and ask how the kitty's feeling, because Anne Marie and I are going to do animal communication, and sometimes people do call in when the pet has been diagnosed with something and either seems not well or it seems perfectly fine. And she asks the animal how they're feeling and how they're doing. And I don't know, it's funny. Sometimes she gets answers back that are bafflingly close to whatever the reality is of that household. And I don't know what to make of any of it. But those of you that like spiritual, psychic, all that kind of woo-woo stuff, the first Tuesday of every month is when that happens. So the quackometer. Talk a little bit, Sean, about what do you mean when you say quack? Because you learned at the feet of one. You tell us that was your very first vet clinic that you went to work for.
Well, so this actually brings up a good topic about a certain disease, because I actually worked for too many quacks, I guess, because after I left that job, I did some relief work, which meant I kind of relieved other veterinarians.
Oh, right.
Excuse me, when they took a little break, excuse me, or a holiday. And so I would see a number of quacks. Usually I had good doctors. Well, you laugh, but I mean, I would see things that really shouldn't have happened. So I'll give you an example. So the first guy I worked for, we won't name any names.
Right.
He's since retired, thankfully, but he would diagnose usually older dogs, sometimes older cats, but usually older dogs that had any sort of neurological problem with a stroke. So it's probably a good time to talk about strokes, because as a rule, strokes don't really occur in dogs. Now, that's not totally true, and they probably occur more frequently than even I will say they occur, but because we don't routinely do MRIs and CT scans, that's really the only way to diagnose a stroke. Dogs certainly get some neurological injuries that have stroke-like effects, but to me, the term stroke was just a cop-out, especially for this particular doctor, because anything that had a stroke, he wouldn't do any more diagnostic testing. He would just say it had a stroke. And, of course, his therapy for a stroke, which is not the therapy for a stroke anyway, would be to give them antibiotics and steroids, which was his therapy for every disease. So anything that came in that he didn't know was a stroke and got steroids and antibiotics. So that's a quack, obviously. That's somebody that shouldn't be practicing. I actually worked for a bigger quack than him, believe it or not, when I did relief work. Now, this particular vet accused me of causing diabetes in a cat. Now, that's actually hard to do.
That is
well, hard. I gave it a steroid shot. Now, keep in mind, this was before I was holistic at all.
Right.
And supposedly the cat got diabetes afterwards, which technically can happen, but that's usually a temporary hyperglycemic state. It's not really diabetes. But I remember at this point, I was so mad at this doctor. I could feel my blood pressure going up every day I went into his office. I'll tell you some other horror stories here while we're on the phone. But, you know, his comment to me was like, so what are you going to tell that cat owner that you caused diabetes? And I'm thinking, I'm not going to say anything because this is my last day. I quit. I'm not going to say a damn thing. You tell me what you're going to say. Anyway, but that was true. So, okay. So what else did he do?
Well, I just want to say that it was probably that Texas veterinarian mind control. Because if you could make animals drop dead at midnight on a Saturday, you could probably give diabetes to a cat with your mind control.
You know, I think I'll tell you what, he really should have had some mind control, because this guy was a quack and shouldn't have been practicing. I think he may still be practicing. But you know something funny, because you're very big about feeding cats properly. So let me tell you what this particular doctor recommended for feeding cats. He did agree with you. This was 20 years ago now. That dry food shouldn't be fed to cats. Okay, we'll give him a little. We'll give him a little.
Credit for that. That's amazing.
But here's what he would say, and I will try to. Well, it's internet radio. I'll still try to clean this up a little bit.
Okay.
He would go into the room and have his diet chat with cat owners. He would say, you know, what are you feeding your cat? They'd say, well, you know, this kibble, something or another.
Right.
And he would say, you know, cats only need to eat. Let's see if I get this correctly. They need to eat all they need to eat is either raw meat or gizzards or liver, because that's what they eat in the wild. And you need to take that, and I'm going to use the term crap. He used a different term. Okay. You need to take that crap food you're feeding down and flush it down the toilet where all crap belongs. So it's like, you know, you don't just feed cats raw meat and raw liver and gizzards. It's like, good God. And then, you know, he actually was such a quack. Truthfully, his receptionist, who the staff told me was also his lover, but that's a different story. His receptionist did surgery for him. That's totally illegal.
Wow.
Unethical. But she would do surgery, and he didn't believe in pain medicine. He didn't believe in wearing sterile gloves. I mean,
wow.
This guy
was
a better cue. And his clients loved him because they didn't know any better. And, of course, I'm in this situation. How do I deal with this? What do I do? And I just quit and left because I couldn't handle this anymore. I mean, it wasn't worth the money just to go there and have to deal with this foolishness.
And you were a young vet, so you couldn't,
yeah,
I mean, you couldn't suddenly go and blow the whistle. I mean, what was the point?
No. Not at all. And so this is the kind of stuff that the state board needs to investigate, not foolishness.
Yeah, anyone who's giving antibiotics and steroid across the board to everybody for everything is actually creating a health crisis for everyone, because when you overprescribe antibiotics, not only are they being given where there's no infection present, and obviously nobody with a minimum understanding of the way the body and the brain work would give antibiotics for a brain bleed or a brain hemorrhage. I mean, what's up with that?
Maybe a little steroid, but that's about it.
That's right. But then the problem is that people don't give the whole dose of antibiotics. So what you're really doing is contributing to antibiotic resistant, bugs.
Unfortunately, that's right.
By not going all the way.
The antibiotics. Now, there are certainly natural things you can do, like the olive leaf plus we talk about. That's one of my little supplements. That's basically my alternative for most pets for antibiotics, antifungal drugs, and it works
really
most of the time, and I hardly ever have to use antibiotics, which is great.
So is it made from the leaves of an olive tree?
Yeah, it's an olive leaf extract. It contains oleopurine, which is an antifungal, antibacterial ingredient. And I hardly ever use antibiotics or antifungal. I never use antifungals, but I hardly ever use antibiotics in my practice, which is good. You know, I think that's wonderful.
It's great. I mean, if you can control and tamp down infection without it, antibiotics are really tough on the system. And as I say, they just – then if the animal really has some life-threatening – disease or infection, you use it when you need it, when it can do the most good.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I don't just use the olive leaf extract, but that's one of the things I use, and it works really well for me.
So when was the moment that you went from being a sidekick to quacks and understanding that holistic medicine was what interested you? Did you have like an epiphany moment, or was it just a slow?
Well, it didn't really have anything to do with the quacks per se. I just got frustrated with the quacks anyway. But I think the thing I started seeing was that when I was treating pets with skin problems, especially allergies, they just wouldn't stay well. They would get better temporarily, and then they wouldn't get better, and they'd have to keep coming back for more medicine. The owners didn't like it. And I just knew there had to be something better than just antibiotics and steroids. And I started learning about skin disease, and we talk about fatty acids, antioxidants, and just some of these easy things, plus herbs and other remedies. And then as I got well known for helping people with allergy problems, kind of the word got out that, oh, he can help your pet with anything. So I had to learn about using natural therapies for all sorts of diseases. So now pretty much everything we treat is naturopathic, which means we'll use some drugs when they're necessary. And most of the time they're not, or they're not necessary for the length of time a conventional doctor might use them, or certainly at the same high doses most conventional doctors would use.
So where did you go to learn about these various supplements and ingredients and how to use them and how much of them to use? Where does a young or old veterinarian go to become a holistic vet? Where is the moment where you learn what all these things are?
Well, I forgot exactly. I think what I started doing was just seeing different products on the market, calling up the companies, talking to their veterinarians on staff, asking questions, learning. I was told to join the Holistic Vet Medical Association, learn from them, started reading books both from the human and the veterinary side, started learning a lot. And as I learned, I decided I also wanted to start sharing my knowledge with other people. So then I started writing books myself to be able to share with people so they would learn that as well.
Talk about the titles of some of your books, because you really do have an impressive shelf of books.
There's a natural health Bible for cancer in pets, right?
Yeah, I have the Natural Health Bible for dogs and cats. I have the Natural Vet's Guide to Preventing and Treating Cancer in Dogs, which you can also use for cats. The information is basically the same. We just did the Natural Vet's Guide to Preventing and Treating Arthritis in Dogs and Cats, which I really wanted to do because most people don't realize cats get arthritis, but they certainly do, as much as dogs. And it's treated similarly, but also in many different ways because of the cat's liver detoxification issues. You can't use all the same drugs and the same dosages. And then what else do we do? The allergy solution for dogs. Of course, I just did my book for veterinarians. And if you have a listener, we have a listener that's very maybe tech or medical savvy,
right,
the nutritional supplement book that goes into scientific knowledge, scientific terms about how these supplements actually work inside of the pet's body. And I actually just spoke to some vets a few weeks ago, as you know, in Phoenix, and sold a lot of books to them because they
wanted
to have this little pocket guide to learn about the common top 50 or so supplements and how to use them in pets correctly.
So the very questions I've been asking tonight, like, what do you mean by antioxidant and how does this other thing work? You've now gathered it all into one book.
That's absolutely right.
How many copies did you sell? I mean, just sort of off the top of
your head. At this conference, probably, well, I talked to the techs one day, the vets one day. I haven't heard an exact count. I'm going to probably say 20, 30, 40, which is actually pretty good.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
And, of course, they highlight the books of the speakers. But I talked about the books, and, you know, I had somebody come up and ask me to sign a book for, which is always kind of fun. So, you know, it's fun when you can talk about your books and people want to get them and learn about them. And I write all these books for myself because I want the information in an easily accessible place, but I also want my clients to be able to get that, or in this case, my colleagues to be able to access that information.
Do you find that sometimes your clients do buy the books and it makes them much better patients because they read about it in your book and then you might mention it in the office and then they can go back in the book and read about it some more and they know they're reading a really trusted source?
You know, I think that's always good. Just like your books and my books, you know, I hope our listeners will buy maybe not all of our books, but one or two of yours, one or two of mine, because they will learn more than we possibly have time to talk about on the show. And if we talk about something like antioxidants, they can go back to any of these books we've been discussing, yours or mine, and read more about them and decide, hey, this may be something that would be beneficial for my pet. Let's try to get that conversation started with my doctor if he's open to that conversation.
Well, if you've written a whole book about allergy, and one of our early email questions from Teresa was about Mansi, the cat with the horrible allergies, and obviously he's very allergic to pollen and seasonal stuff. How did you learn which supplements to use? I mean, it couldn't be trial and error. You wouldn't have long enough. Is it something you learned from the Chinese? Are they the ones that sort of led this knowledge issue?
I mean, it depends. I mean, for Chinese herbs, certainly. For Western herbs, you go to Western doctors. You know, when you're learning this, it's in a way, it's kind of like learning about conventional drug therapy, although you have thousands more choices than you have for drugs. So,
right.
For example, when you're in veterinary school, learning about different antibiotics, and we have more now than when I was in vet school, but you had about five or six classes of antibiotics, which are basically antibiotic types. Then you learn about antibiotics within that type. And you learn, you know, which antibiotics could be effective for this infection or not effective for this infection. Hopefully, as you're doing your clinical rotations, you're seeing which ones are being used frequently. And you do kind of learn by, I hate to say trial and error, but learning from someone else who's guiding you. So when it comes to supplements, you know, I would talk to other vets and say, okay, for liver disease, what are some things you like? Oh, we love this. Okay, well, I'll try that. And that would work. So the more I learned, I could then critically evaluate other supplements I was seeing and say, you know what, I'm getting good response from this, but I wonder if I add this, what's going to happen? Because I've read good things about it, and sure enough, that would help. Just like now, if I'm doing something that's helping a lot, I'm going to keep doing it and teach other people. If something maybe isn't as effective anymore, well, I'm constantly learning and constantly trying things. The neat thing about the holistic approach, which is also very frustrating, is, you know, when someone asks me, for example, my dog or cat itches, how would you treat my pet? I don't have a clue. Because I don't know your dog. I don't know your cat. I don't know what you can afford to do. I don't know how easy it is to medicate your pet. I don't know if your pet's going to need drugs and supplements.
Right.
So let's have this big conversation. We're going to have a 30-minute conversation. Then I'm going to prescribe some supplements for your pet that I think could work. Of course, you have to give them to work, just like we were talking about a few minutes
That's
ago.
That's funny how that is.
Now, if you give them and they don't work, what that tells me is your pet's body saying, I don't need these. These aren't helping me. Right. I need something else. So it's very much listening to the pet's body and sometimes objectively listening through a blood test or, you know, another test. Sometimes it's just watching a response. So if an owner says, this stuff doesn't work you gave me, okay, well, don't blame me. I don't know what's going to work. I know what could right. work. I don't right. know what your pet needs. Your pet has right. to tell me. And I tell people that up front to try to prevent them from getting frustrated because sometimes stuff doesn't work. Well, yeah. okay, no one product, drug or supplement, is going to work in 100% of the pets I see. I can tell you what works in most of my itchy pets, but I don't know what's going to work in your pet. Just like my dog's been itching, I didn't know what's going to work in her. Well, literally through trial and error, okay, this seems to work better than this, so we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to do this.
And you really do just go on that empirical.
Well, you
evidence.
Have to do that because I have to give the pet a chance to respond. But it's not just totally hit or miss. I know going in what could help my patient based upon the science of how these things work. Just like I know with an antibiotic, what antibiotic could help a pet with a skin infection. But 20% of the time I choose the wrong antibiotic. And I know that because the antibiotic didn't work. Yeah. So we try something else. Even when a culture tells me the antibiotic should work, that doesn't mean the pet read the same lab report I read. It means the pet read the book I read. I have to go by, you know, what's so funny, you laugh at that, but I used to work for a vet in Houston when I was a teenager, then a pre-vet, and then a vet student. And I would talk about, you know, we saw this in this pet today, but the book says this. And he said, well, the pet didn't read that book. And that's true. Just because the book says something doesn't mean the pet's going to follow the book. And if you look at an anatomy book, when you do surgery, sometimes the pet's anatomy doesn't match the picture I'm looking at. Well, why not? Well, because pets are made differently. Not every pet's the same. Some pets don't have that blood vessel there. They have a different one. Yeah. Okay, well, you just have to understand that as a doctor that this is a guide, and most pets follow the guide, but some don't. And that's where the art of medicine, which I like, comes into play. But the art can frustrate doctors that like more of the science, and it can certainly frustrate owners that are expecting you should pick the right pill every time and it should work.
Right.
Well, our bodies don't react that way. We don't understand that.
And so the people that come to you with their pets need to have that mindset of yeah. openness, patience, acceptance, and a realistic expectation. And then they become a true partner because their attitude is, okay, we tried that. Now what do you recommend next? That did or didn't work, what do you recommend next? Instead of anger or frustration or blame, which you really don't seem to do much. I mean, many times I've had animals put on antibiotics. Scooby had an ACL repair of his knee that there was something wrong with it right in the beginning. He licked it right open, right down to what seemed to be the bone. And they tried to culture the area to find out what was wrong. And, you know, even a culture cannot necessarily tell them exactly the right antibiotics.
No, it's just a guide.
Yeah. So I think that if it were Western medicine, we wouldn't say, wow, you made a terrible mistake. You don't know what you're doing. If a Western type medicine doesn't work, you're like, oh, this must be a really bad problem because that didn't work. Now what will we do? But you wouldn't think to blame the doctor.
Well, sometimes they do. You know, because they don't understand that no drug works all the time.
Yeah, I guess we're a kind of an impatient society. We want results now.
People expect medicine to be an exact science, and it's not. And the reason it's not is because I can't control what's happening in your body or your pet's body. I can try to influence it, but I don't have ultimate control. I can pick a drug, you know, like for cancer that I know can kill cancer, but maybe your cancer has genes that prevent this drug from working. Maybe your cancer is more advanced. Maybe your body doesn't metabolize the drug well, and there's no way for me to know that. So there are all these little nuances that occur within our bodies and our pets' bodies that many times we have no way of knowing. All we can do is say, okay, this should work, and we're going to see what happens. If it does, fine. If not, well, sometimes the patient dies. Sometimes we get a second or third chance. We just don't know. But, you know, when you have pets and people with cancer and you have drugs that work, for example, why don't they all work? Where there are all these little nuances
that we can't control or predict.
And we just have to accept that. It's kind of like, you know, the weather in a way. We kind of know how to forecast the weather, but you can't predict that there could be a sudden change that just comes out of the blue.
Right. Yeah. And it's just there's things that are out of your control and are very individualized. We're going to go for our last break. When we get back, we're going to think of something else riveting to talk about. We've got a minute and a half to think of it. On your mark, get set, go. We'll go to a break. This show is supported by Platinum Performance Canine Wellness Formula, which is a comprehensive nutritional foundation formula for all dogs, which addresses canine health at the cellular level, providing a special blend of more than 55 nutrients that improves the fundamental health of each of your dog's 12 trillion cells. Healthy cells mean a healthy dog. That's the Platinum difference. Platinum Performance Canine Wellness is a supplement scientifically proven to improve the cognitive ability of dogs in a study designed to measure their learning ability. When the dogs were tested on how well they remembered the skills learned in the first phase, dogs on Platinum Performance demonstrated superior memory by completing the task more quickly than the control group. To give your dog that mental edge, especially as she ages, go to RadioPetLady.com to get free samples and learn more. And there's Platinum Feline Formula for the kitties, too. Support for the show comes from Waruva, a family-owned company that makes canned food for cats and little dogs from ingredients we could eat ourselves. Because they think dogs and cats should eat as well as we do, so their foods are made in a human food facility. We salute Waruva's ethical decision to make no dry food because they know that for optimal wellness, small dogs don't need highly processed carbohydrates, and that true health for cats, who are obligate carnivores, means they should eat only meat and have no need for carbohydrates in their diet. In addition to all the delicious Waruva recipes, they also make Cats in the Kitchen in pouches and their more economical BFF, Best Feline Friend brand, using smaller-bodied fish for your cat's health. This show is brought to you by Vectra 3D for Dogs, a safe and effective topical anti-tick and flea treatment that you put on your dog's skin once a month to repel parasites. Vectra 3D has the newest technology. In scientific tests, Vectra 3D was shown to create a shield on your dog's skin to repel ticks and kill them fast and reliably for the entire month, unlike older products which don't last the full 30 days and only kill ticks that bite your dog, a bite which can actually transmit the many tick-borne diseases even without the parasites staying attached. With Vectra 3D, ticks are killed just by coming into contact with your dog, but it's still safe for the people in your family. Vectra for cats and dogs who live where there are no ticks is the anti-flea topical treatment that repels and kills fleas and also kills all three life cycles of the flea. Vectra is only available from practicing veterinarians. To learn more and find out how your own vet can get the Vectra products, go to RadioPetLady.com.
Sean, I would love to talk about ticks for a minute because it's only just nearly the end of March here in Vermont, and there are some warmer afternoons, but still cold nights, and the ticks are already all over the place. I mean, where there's deer, there's ticks, and where there's dogs, there's ticks that try to attach to them, and I quick got the Vectra on my dogs and forgot to mention it to my neighbor, who is now a Vectra user also because he was using other brands that didn't last the 30 days. And he already had some on his dog's ears, not having started with his Vectra yet. Do you have ticks in Texas or just fleas?
We do have ticks. We get problems with Ehrlichia and Rocky Mountain spotted fever,
right. Not
Lyme's disease. Usually I don't see a lot of ticks, which I guess is pretty good. I tend to see more problems with fleas, I think. So, you know, I'm very fortunate really because we're located in Plano, and I guess with the way my pet owners take care of their pets, etc. I really don't see a lot of bad problems with fleas or ticks. Last summer was a little bit more severe because it was warmer. I don't know what this summer is going to be like, but I hardly ever have to use flea and tick chemicals. When I do, I use them on a needed basis.
Right.
I know where you live, it's more of a regular problem because of the Lyme's disease you've got.
And we have these other tick-borne diseases, the ones that you mentioned, and babesiosis. How do you pronounce that one?
Oh, yes.
There's some bad ones, and they definitely pass to people. What about the worms that fleas give to dogs and cats? Is that something that people – I think people are a little unaware of that.
Yeah, so fleas transmit tapeworms. Tapeworms are very easy for owners to diagnose, actually challenging for vets because we don't really see the worm eggs. When you do a microscopic fecal exam, you're looking for parasite eggs. When you have a tapeworm, what you find in the fecal sample are little grains that look like rice. Those are actually pieces of the worm. In that little piece, or what's called a proglotted segment, are the actual eggs. And unless those little pieces burst open, I'll never see the eggs. So you have to tell me your dog or cat has tapeworms. Now, if you see tapeworms, I know your pet has fleas, unless you've got an outdoor cat that maybe is killing mice and rats. They can also get them from mice and rats. But most of the tapeworms we see, probably 99%, are from fleas. So even if I never see any fleas, if I see tapeworms on your pet or in your pet, I know it's had some flea issues. So we may need to do a little flea treatment then, and then we're fine. Everything's great.
And the worms, how do you clear up tapeworm? It seems to me I once had a dog that had it, and maybe it's changed it now, but it was a very expensive medication.
Yeah, it probably has changed because I actually will use medicine rather than anything homeopathic because I just think the medicines are so safe we have nowadays for deworming. And if they have diarrhea or something, I'll do some GI support with some enzymes and probiotics. But basically a one-time deworming, and if the owner is still seeing these tapeworm segments, it doesn't usually mean the medicine didn't work. Normally what happens is they're still getting fleas because the medicine is pretty 100% effective. It really is.
And so if you see what looks like rice, it's actually flat pieces of this long, gross worm that are
breaking off. That's right. Pieces that break off.
Ew. So, well, I don't know. I just think it's one of the grossest things in the world. There's a worm inside
the dog
or cat. Yeah. Is it a myth that the worm is quote unquote eating your animal's food, so the animal, if it was untreated, would get thinner and thinner because the worm would be eating everything? Or is that just a myth?
Well, I mean, that's technically true, but you'd have to have so many worms inside that pet. We're talking more puppies or kittens, that'd be a real problem.
Puppies and kittens, if I'm not wrong, have to be dewormed because they're born with worms. Is that right? They just have them?
Those worms are roundworms and hookworms, which are more serious and also transmissible to people. So we deworm puppies and kittens. They're usually born with them through the placenta and or the milk and, of course, just the mother pooping, the puppies pooping, the kittens pooping, etc. So I routinely deworm pregnant moms. I routinely deworm the puppies and kittens 2, 4, 6, 8, 12, 16 weeks of age. Once again, this is a public health problem.
Right.
A very serious public health problem, by the way, not just something to joke about, but something very serious, in addition to obviously a serious problem for the pet.
Yeah, because the puppy and kitten can't grow properly if there's worms inside. I mean, it's disrupting their whole system.
That's right.
This is a zoonotic disease, meaning that it passes from these animals to us, and it's mostly through saliva. And so if young children are around
it. Feces. So they actually have to – this sounds gross, but they actually have to ingest some feces, which when you think about it, kids are always playing with dirt, putting stuff in their mouths, etc. Or if the dog or cat, the pet has worms, and the kids are playing with the poop or around the pet's feet that they have stepped in the feces, it's actually pretty easy to transmit. Now, for adults, it's unlikely you or I are going to ingest feces unless we're petting our dog or cat and don't wash our hands before we, say, bite our nails or something. But it's really more of a problem with little kids. They're close to the ground. They're in sandboxes where cats and puppies like to poop and just getting the fecal material that way.
Do you think that washing our hands after we pat – I mean, I never stop patting my dogs – but do you think that washing our hands more often is pretty smart, that there are a number of things that we could be picking up from them, or is only specifically if the animals have worms?
It's really more the worms you're going to have a problem with. You know, dogs and cats are pretty healthy. They don't carry a lot of things we're going to catch. So it's really more of the worms that I worry about.
And so do you try to remind people, especially when they have puppies, to wash their hands quite a lot before they bite their nails or make their dinner?
You know, I try to let them know about these, and I always ask them if they have young children in the house and just kind of let them know, you know, common sense, what you have to really deal with.
But it is something that people should be aware of. I mean, I don't think it's something people don't think of a puppy or a kitten as a worm factory, but they kind of are.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they really are in a way.
They're kind of riddled with them. So if the mother
is given a dewormer, do the puppies and kittens still get born with worms?
Well, that certainly is a possibility. What you're trying to do is to kill as many of the worms as you can in the mom, where they stay silent until they're activated through pregnancy. So the Centers for Disease Control pretty much assume that every puppy or kitten has roundworms and hookworms. That's probably a pretty close assumption, a pretty good guess. So, you know, you're trying to kill them before they're transmitted to the puppies or kittens. We know it's not perfect. With the life cycle of the puppies and the kittens' worms, you have to do more than one deworming. And the dewormings we have are so safe now that I don't really even worry about, you know, toxicity issues as a result, because I just never see that happen.
So it's the pregnancy itself that
activates the worms in the mother, quiet, and then, you know, you get pregnant and it activates them, and the worms kind of go through this life cycle, and they end up transmitting through the placenta and or the milk or both.
Yikes. So it's the pregnancy hormones that inspire them.
Pretty much, yeah. Just the whole state of pregnancy, which actually pregnancy is kind of a weird thing. It can actually kind of mess up your immune system a little bit.
Really?
Yeah. So it's activating these parasites that have been kept in check by the immune system.
Oh, and so much energy, if you will, if that's the right word, is going to the creation of the fetus.
Yes.
That it shifts away from its other jobs and only focuses on protecting the fetus, not on the mother herself?
Well, kind of a combination of both, but just the act of being pregnant just activates these worms.
Yike. So that's something that people really don't realize. Does that mean that the mother, the pregnant mom, and the nursing mom is also a transmitter of the worms while she's pregnant and nursing?
Not as much as the puppies or kittens, but that certainly can happen. So once again, we just treat these dogs as if they're infected, and we just have to be very careful.
Okay, everybody, be on alert. There's more things to worry about than you ever realized. Dr. Sean, thank you so much. You get the week off next week while Anne Marie and I communicate with the animals, but you're a gem. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tracy. We had fun tonight. It was great.
We sure did. Have a great night, everybody. Kiss your kitties and hug your pooches. We'll talk to you next week. Bye for now.